Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU.
This week's Scottish festival boss hits out at proposed alcohol sponsorship ban. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when, well, we're back for now. We'll see how we go. We've had a couple of weeks off. One, because we just couldn't do it. You were away. And then one, because there's some. I've had some stuff going on we don't need to go into. But
you said I was away like I was swimming in the Caribbean. I was. I did a week of teaching as part of the UD music program at Talent House in Stratford. That was what I was doing. I wasn't on a beach somewhere. But yeah, without providing any warning nor permission slips from, you know, people who might give permission slips, we took 2 weeks off. And you alluded to the fact that there might be some other unannounced weeks off coming up.
Well, if we announce them now, I mean, well, I'm not going to announce them now, but I'm going to say that there might be some more gaps in service in the coming weeks because I don't know what's going on. But we're here this week, and that's something. And then we can announce a couple of other weeks that are going to be off in March.
I am going to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. I've never been to South by Southwest. I'm not quite sure how that happened. So I'm going over there and I'm doing the full thing. So regular listeners probably know South by Southwest, massive showcase festival in Austin, in Texas. But as well as the music showcase festival and music conference, lots of other stuff happens around about the same time too, with like a tech focus and an education focus. So I'm going to all of it, which means, well, sometimes when I go on my travels like that, I still manage to find an hour in a hotel room to record my side of the podcast, and providing you, our listeners, are willing to forgive an extra echo or weird sound issues. We don't really give people the choice, do we? Well, they could not listen.
No.
If they don't like.
Yeah, we don't record two versions.
But
one good, one bad.
Normally when I'm away, I'm somewhere in Europe where there's not much of a time difference to contend with. Whereas when I'm in Texas and Andy's working UK hours, it may well be that even if I could find a space in the Airbnb I'm going to be staying in, it probably isn't going to work out time difference wise. So yeah, if you're at South By though, I will be doing a panel all about getting songwriters paid and the leaky pipes that stop songwriters getting paid. So that is happening while I am there. So we'll almost certainly have a couple of weeks missing in the middle of March. I've also got some other events coming up in the next couple of months. I'll be speaking at Ment in Ljubljana at the end of March. I'm also going to be taking part in a super interesting panel at Liverpool Sound City. That's actually the end of April. We may be able to record podcasts while I'm at those events. We may not. Don't know, which is why we're being a little bit random about all of this. But yeah, if you're at any of those events, do come and say hello. Do check out my sessions. Of course, The Great Escape is also looming, which means we'll be missing at least... Yeah. Oh, actually, last year we recorded an edition at The Great Escape, didn't we? So we didn't miss a week.
We did do that, yeah.
We had that whole hour of me and you both losing our voices after 3 days or 4 days at The Great Escape. So maybe we won't miss a week for The Great Escape, but TGE is coming up. And while I'm plugging all the events I'm going to be talking at, we really ought to plug Great Escape, because in the next few days, as you're hearing this podcast, assuming you're listening to it as it goes live, we've got some big updates on The Great Escape conference. So do keep an eye on that. I'm hoping that even though we're being a little bit random in telling you what's happening when in terms of set list, that we will still be able to provide you with a list of links to all of those events in the podcast notes. That's providing Andy Malt remembers to do that.
Yes. Oh, I'll do that. Don't worry. It's all we're saying is that we've been pretty good at going out every week for a while now, and the next couple of months might be a bit hit and miss. But we'll see. Don't know. It might be that we're here every week until South by Southwest. It might be that we're here throughout South by Southwest. But we just don't know. But we're here now and we're at least giving you a heads up this time rather than just disappearing for 2 weeks.
So when we do land in your podcast app of choice on a Monday morning, consider that a special treat, or if you prefer, on the weeks we don't land in your podcast app, maybe that's the treat. I don't know. But that's our slightly random overview of what's happening with Setlist in the next couple of months, what's happening in terms of me speaking at events in the next couple of months. But even though we spent quite a few minutes going through all of this, that's not why we've gathered here today. It is not what we're here to talk about this week on Setlist.
No, later on, we'll be discussing the Australian record industry's anger at TikTok over its ongoing experiment in the country to test the role that music plays on the video sharing platform. But first, the boss of Scottish live music firm DF Concerts, that's Jeff Ellis, has told the country's government that any ban on alcohol brands sponsoring shows and festivals would be nothing short of disastrous for Scotland's live music industry.
And for all of our slightly arrogant English listeners tuning in, thinking, hang on a second, the country's government, Scottish Music Festival Company, is the UK government proposing a ban on alcohol advertising? You are forgetting Scotland is a country in its own right, with lots of powers devolved to the Scottish Parliament and the Scottish Executive, and it is a specific proposal that has been floated within Scottish political circles and a consultation that was launched by the Scottish government last year that Jeff Ellis has been responding to in the last week.
Yeah, the Scottish government began a consultation on restricting alcohol advertising and promotion last year with the country's Minister for Public Health, Women's Health and Sport, it's a fun combination, Marie Todd, noting at the time that alcohol-related harm is one of the most pressing public health challenges that we face in Scotland. She then added, restricting alcohol marketing is identified as one of the World Health Organization's three best buys, the most cost-effective measures that WHO recommends to prevent and reduce alcohol-related harm. Many of our European neighbours have already taken action to do this, including Ireland, France and Norway. This consultation sets out a potential approach for Scotland.
So as part of this consultation that launched last year, the Scottish government published this document. It's quite lengthy and it talks about all the different ways that alcohol companies go about flogging their products to the world at large. So the consultation is looking at everything, so TV advertising, poster advertising, online advertising, but also the presence that alcohol brands have at big events. A big chunk of the report actually focuses specifically on sport and the involvement of alcohol in sponsoring sporting events and teams and stadiums and stuff like that. So there's a real focus on the alcohol brands in Scotland that are basically getting to consumers when they are consuming sporting events. But alongside all the sporty stuff, it then does talk about alcohol sponsorship and alcohol brands having a presence at non-sporting events, which of course takes us very much into sort of the music, gigging, festivals space, which is why DF Concerts and Jeff Ellis has taken a big interest in this consultation.
So plenty of venues, shows and festivals rely on marketing partnerships with brands to ensure that their operations are commercially viable. And alcohol brands have traditionally been key targets for live music companies seeking partnerships like that. Not least because people drink alcohol when they're watching live music. So for the brands, their products can be available and on sale at those venues, shows and festivals, which they're also sponsoring. So the benefit of that marketing is, I guess, immediate, pretty much.
Yeah, and anybody listening who has ever been involved in any events or shows or tours or festivals or anything music related where brand sponsorship is part of the business model, where you need to get some brand money in, unless what you're doing is very much aimed at children or teenagers, young teenagers, assuming whatever you're doing is for an 18 plus audience. Well, I mean, If you had a brainstorm with your team about what brands you might approach in order to get some cash to help make your festival or your tour happen or to help support your venue, inevitably you're going to start listing alcohol brands pretty quickly, because alcohol brands famously spend money in the music space. And of course, there was a time, wasn't there, where Carling in particular here in the UK spent an awful lot of money on music, and lots of venues had Carling in their name and some festivals had Carling in their name. But I mean, you know, Jägermeister and Gamers Cider and Bacardi. I mean, these are just brands off the top of my head. If I was doing anything music related, you'd be like, well, those brands have a history of spending money on music stuff. We should go and talk to them. So, brands, sponsorship, important part of particularly the live side of the music industry, and alcohol brands often a specific target for music companies. And indeed, sometimes not only are the alcohol brands that are doing the sponsoring available to buy at the event, because as we say, alcohol is generally sold alongside music events and consumed alongside music events. Sometimes part of the deal is what we call pouring rights, which is where the brand who is sponsoring the venue or the festival has a control over what products are sold at the bars, at the venue or the festival. So when Carling is your sponsor, all the lager products are either going to be Carling lager or maybe another lager owned by the same company. In fact, I did see somebody on social media say that if what we're talking about here, this proposal in Scotland that maybe we shouldn't allow alcohol companies to have a presence at music events, somebody did say the only upside of that happening is you wouldn't be forced to drink the specific products that are sponsoring the festival or venue. Maybe you'd have a bigger choice of lagers or whiskies or whatever it is to choose from.
Now, DF Concerts, which is a Live Nation subsidiary, is probably still best known as the promoter of the Tea in the Park Festival, which ran from 1994 until 2016. And the T in Tea in the Park stood for Tennent's, which is the lager brand that sponsored the festival. Now, as I say, that festival is no longer going, but DF's current festivals, Transmit and Summer Sessions, while not having alcohol brands in their names, have had brand support from the likes of Bacardi and Carlsberg.
Yeah, so I think it is no surprise that DF Concerts are not impressed with this proposal that has been made in Scottish political circles, that maybe we should have a new law that says that alcohol companies are not allowed to sponsor or have a presence at music events. Although it has to be said, although DF, as the founders of Tea in the Park, which obviously for a time was the biggest music event in Scotland, pretty much, and also a prolific promoter generally and part of Live Nation. But I would say that, you know, a lot of what Jeff Ellis and DF Concerts has been saying about this in the last week or so, those opinions were very much shared, certainly by the wider Live Nation group, because there are other venues and festivals and tours within Live Nation where alcohol brands are part of the mix. But also other promoters and venues operating at all levels of the Scottish music scene. There are plenty of other events and promoters and shows and festivals and venues that would be looking at this and thinking, wow, if we can no longer have a commercial relationship with alcohol brands around our events, that's going to be a chunk of money we're losing at a time where, and we've discussed this quite a bit on Setlist in recent months, the live industry needs every penny it can get at the moment, particularly at sort of the grassroots and mid-tier level.
Yeah, so DF's CEO Jeff Ellis earlier this month wrote to that Scottish Government Minister Marie Todd about those proposed restrictions on alcohol sponsorship, saying, "This letter is not intended to ignore or try to dismiss the fact that there are problem drinkers in Scotland. Rather, it is to implore the Scottish Government not to pursue the misguided proposal to ban all forms of alcohol marketing and sponsorship. It is not advertising and sponsorship that are the cause of the problem," he goes on. "Indeed, the fortified wine drink most anecdotally associated with violence and underage drinking is a brand that is not advertised at all." That's Buckfast, if you're wondering. "The root causes of addiction problems are what the government should be focusing on, such as poverty and other societal factors, as well as improving support services for those affected." Then, outlining the impact an alcohol sponsorship ban could have on live music in Scotland, he went on, "A proposed restriction on alcohol sponsorship and advertising will be nothing short of disastrous for Scotland's live music industry. It will set Scotland back irreparably in cultural, social and economic terms, especially in relation to our UK neighbours and the rest of Europe. Many live music venues will be forced to close, and those that remain will need to increase ticket prices considerably, hurting Scottish music fans disproportionately compared to those elsewhere in the UK. Without doubt, as festivals and venues disappear, Scottish audiences will flock to England, and the country will lose the benefit of attracting fans from the rest of the UK and further afield, as it will have no music festivals of any note. So that paints a pretty bleak picture.
Yeah, it certainly does. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because at the moment, the idea of drinks brands not being allowed to be involved in festivals or live music shows, initially in Scotland, but maybe that might then expand elsewhere in the UK, it does seem like quite a dramatic move. That said, I am old enough to remember when cigarette brands had a presence
yeah.
at music events, because there used to be a thing. Certainly this used to happen at the Edinburgh Festival, and I think it happened at music festivals as well, where Marlborough would have a team of people going around and swapping their whatever cigarettes they were smoking with a new pack of Marlborough. The reason I know this is because my smoker friends used to always make sure that when they were at a venue where they knew these Marlborough brand people were, is they would make sure they always had a box of cigarettes in their pocket with only one cigarette in it so that they could swap it for a new box with 20 from Marlborough. But yeah, you know, there was a point at which cigarette brands would have a presence at music events, and now that just seems a bit bizarre.
Yeah, I don't remember that happening, but I do remember, you know, people from cigarette brands just coming out, giving out free cigarettes to people, which seems just bizarre now, but it's quite welcome at the time.
So although I very much sympathise with what Jeff Ellis has said in his letter, and I know that there are plenty of other promoters and festivals and venues, as I say, who would, you know, see this as being cutting off an important and sometimes pretty significant revenue stream for the live sector, it is one of those things where these things seem ludicrous until they happen, and then sometimes with hindsight it's like, yeah, it was a bit mad that we were pushing those alcohol products on young people in such a prolific way. So who knows? Now, of course, this is a consultation that is happening within the Scottish Government at the moment, so no decisions have yet been made, and lots of other people will be inputting, I am sure. Although a spokesperson for the government, after this letter had been sent in and was then reported on, particularly in the Scottish media, a spokesperson for the Scottish government, although saying that the consultation is open until the 9th of March and no decisions have been taken and that all views and responses will be given serious and thorough consideration, they did then add, somewhat sternly, reducing the exposure of children to alcohol promotion is a priority. There's clear evidence which shows adverts glamorising drinking can encourage young people to drink alcohol and can also have a detrimental impact on those in recovery from problem alcohol use. Of course, some music events are 18 plus, so the promoters of those events might say, well, where's the problem if our audience is 18 plus? But there are events where, you know, people under the age of 18 can get in, certainly with festivals. Plus, you know, critics might say, even if the show in theory is 18 plus, if all the marketing and advertising for the show has the alcohol brand's logos on it, alongside artists that the younger people are really passionate about, well, maybe that's where the problem lies. I don't have opinions here. I'm not siding with this at all, because I know lots of people in the live industry will be concerned about this. But I'm guessing those are the arguments on the other side.
Now, there is one thing that could affect all of this. We're not entirely sure at the moment. But last week, Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon resigned, and her party, the SNP, will now be beginning the process of finding a replacement for her. It's not clear what that will mean for this consultation and any outcome from it, whether it will put an end to the consultation entirely, as sometimes happens when there's a change of regime at the top of a government. It might be that it carries on and this remains a concern for the live industry. And it may be that these proposed restrictions become actual restrictions. But as I say, at the moment, that is unclear. So this may be an ongoing story. It may be a story that is about to come to an end. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see once we know who is taking over as leader of the SNP in Scotland and therefore becomes the new First Minister of Scotland. There's not another election due in Scotland for the Scottish Parliament for a few years yet. And the SNP, although it doesn't actually have the majority in the Scottish Parliament, it very nearly does. And it has like an alliance at the moment, I think, with the Green Party, but, you know, pretty strong in political circles. So I don't think there should be anything radically changing. But as you say, even if it's basically the same party and mainly the same team of people running the country for the next few years, even what's new First Minister's in place, sometimes that change of leadership does mean a change of priorities, and it could be that this ceases to be a priority, or maybe it becomes a bigger priority. Who knows? But nevertheless, interesting development in Scotland, and definitely something we'll be following.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, the Australian record industry has formally hit out at TikTok's ongoing experiment in the country to test the role that music plays on the video sharing platform. The Australian Recording Industry Association says it's unfair to disrupt the experience of TikTok's Australian users as part of an experiment that won't result in any credible insights.
Yeah, so while we took our little unannounced impromptu break on Setlist, it emerged that TikTok was limiting the number of songs available within its app for some of its users, specifically in Australia. And what that restriction means is, if you are one of the affected users, some of the tracks that you would usually expect to find in the TikTok Sounds library, where obviously you can then grab the track and put it into a video that you are creating, some of those tracks are currently missing for some users. And also, if you've got videos that use those tracks in the past, if those users go and watch those videos, the sound will be muted. Once it became apparent that this was happening within Australia, a spokesperson for TikTok did confirm that that is indeed happening and said in a statement, some of our community in Australia will not be able to access our full TikTok Sounds library at the moment. This will only affect certain music and is scheduled work while we analyse how sounds are accessed and added to videos, as well as looking how to improve and enhance the wider sounds library. So, it's all part of an experiment to figure out how TikTok users, particularly people creating content on TikTok, how they're interacting with music, how they're using music, how to make that better is the official line. But I don't think you have to be even close to CMU level of cynical to be thinking, yeah, I think we know what's going on here.
Yeah, so this experiment comes as music companies seek to revamp their licensing deals with TikTok, hoping to shift from a lump sum fee model, as they're on now, to a revenue share model more akin to streaming services. And certainly to increase how much revenue ultimately flows from TikTok over into the music industry. And TikTok's experiment may be partly to help management of the company better understand the value that music delivers to its platform, especially if some kind of revenue share model will inevitably become part of its deals with the music industry in the future. However, negotiators on the music industry side obviously reckon that the aim, at least in part, is to provide TikTok with a whole load of data about music usage, which it can then use to beat down the record labels and music publishers on price. Except, no one's really going to trust any research on the value of music to TikTok that is carried out by TikTok.
No. On one level, you could say, what's the point? But we do know that a priority for the music industry this year is changing its working relationship with TikTok, because although TikTok obviously is a hugely important marketing platform for the music industry, we all know that, and it does pump some money into the business. It is currently a licensed platform. However, we're sort of in that situation we've been in before with other, particularly user upload and social media platforms, which become massive, where the music industry is thinking, yeah, we get a promotional benefit. Yeah, we're making some money. But we feel that music is so important to your product and so fundamental to your experience. And sometimes your own music executives say that themselves, that we don't think that we're making enough money given how much advertising you're selling and how much money you're generating. So we want to change the deals. We want to shift over to a revenue share model. But then what does that mean? Even if you could persuade TikTok to shift to a rev share model, more like Spotify and Apple, but actually also a bit more like YouTube, which I guess is a closer platform to TikTok. But if you can shove them over to a revenue share model, I mean, they probably don't want to even do that. And maybe that part of this data is to provide ammunition as to why they shouldn't even consider a revenue share approach. But if you do go to a revenue share approach, well, it's not quite as simple as the Spotify business model, where you say, okay, Spotify is first and foremost a music service. The people who are paying to subscribe, they're paying to access the music. So therefore, we'll take X percent of all the subscription revenue because it's a music service. Whereas TikTok, you know, to be fair, can rightly say, even if they were to accept, which I don't think they would in the context of the current licensing negotiations, but even if they were to accept that music is a really big part of the TikTok experience, and arguably more so than even YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, it's not the entirety of the experience. Clearly, the content that the creators are creating is really important. Not all of that content has music in it. So if TikTok was to move to a rev share model, well, what does that even look like? What does it mean? So these are all questions that this experiment in Australia could be analysing and trying to get some data on to help inform decision making within TikTok and any potential shift to a revenue share model down the line. Or it's simply that TikTok recognises as the current licensing negotiations progress, the labels and publishers are going to dig their feet and say, we need more money, we need more money. And they want to have some stats to prove why they shouldn't increase the amount of money, certainly not significantly, going over to the music industry. Except, as you said, data about TikTok collated by TikTok isn't going to be very persuasive for anybody but TikTok. So maybe it's a stupid idea. Who knows? But I'll tell you who does know that it's a stupid idea. As you mentioned, it's the Australian Recording Industry Association, the trade body for the Australian record industry, who has spoken out against this in the last week. And their CEO, Annabella Hurd, is pretty adamant it's a stupid thing to do.
Yes, she said in her statement, it is frustrating to see TikTok deliberately disrupt Australians' user and creator experience in an attempt to downplay the significance of music on its platform. After exploiting artists' content and relationships with fans to build the platform, TikTok now seeks to rationalise cutting artists' compensation by staging a test of music's role in content discovery. This despite the fact that in 2021, TikTok's global head of music, Ula Oberman, said music is at the heart of the TikTok experience. I mean, it's his job to say that, but he did say it. She goes on, the test is presented as an effort to analyse, improve and enhance the platform's wider sound library. But as little as 5 months ago, TikTok's chief operating officer, Vanessa Pappas, said that 80% of content consumed on TikTok is programmed by algorithms. And therein lies a problem. She continues, if this is the case, then it's difficult to trust that this is a true test. TikTok can set its Australian algorithm up front to, within parameters they define, deliver the results they want. Australians deserve better. TikTok should end this test immediately and restore music access to all users and creators.
So that's TikTok told. Not sure they particularly care. Actually, that's not fair. I do know for a fact that the music team at TikTok care, but whether or not the higher ups and the parent company ByteDance care, well, that's another story entirely. But will be interesting to see A, how long this little experiment in Australia continues to run for before the music returns, and B, what is it that TikTok are planning on doing with that data, particularly in the context of these ongoing licensing negotiations? We shall see, but expect plenty more tensions when it comes to all things TikTok in the music industry for the foreseeable future, until TikTok can kind of get itself to where YouTube currently is, which is no longer the enemy of the industry that underpays, a trusted, valuable partner of the music industry today. Can TikTok get to that point? We will see.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. Hopefully we will be back again with you in a week's time. Who knows? Stay tuned to the CMU and Setlist social media for updates on that. But for now, if you want to read more about anything we've discussed on this episode, you can go to the show notes in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com, where you will find links ready and waiting for you. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't done that already. Rate and review the show. Tell all your friends about the show. Another thing, I feel like it'd be nice to have another thing, but I can't think of one. If you can think of another thing, email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.